Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Ladies, gentlemen, welcome to the colorful world of Skittles. Skittles brings you a jolt of 5 fruity flavors in every bite, giving you the chance to taste the rainbow like never before. Break free from the ordinary day-to-day with the help of Skittles chewy candy. Skittles is a must in my candy jar, movie snack, even my secret, so an afternoon pick-me-up. And I don't even care who knows it. Add a splash of joy to your day with Skittles. There's nothing better than fruity fun that tickles your taste buds. Taste the rainbow.
Nobody move, there's blood on the floor. And I can't find my heart. Doom, 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 doom. Where did it go? Did I leave it in the cold? Doom, 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 doom. So please give it back, cause it's not yours to take. Doom, 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 doom. It must have felt when I lost my mind. Boom, doom, 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 doom. Deep in the cut, drowning it in pain. Somebody help, cause I can't find my way. Boom, doom, 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 doom. Nobody move. Nobody move. Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, nigga, that was smooth. Why wasn't Kia here to hear that smoothness? Praise the Lord, niggas. Welcome back to the final resting episode of Getting Grown while we are on this break. I just wanted to come through real quick and introduce our final reprise episode. You already know it's featuring our sister and one of our very faves, Hey Fran Hey. So please enjoy this episode of Radical Joy. We're talking about fearless self-care and cultivating the practice of joy as acts of restoration, which is perfect timing for this break that we've taken, is it not? We get to come back all refreshed, and we got awesome guests for you all in the future, and I'm so excited for you all to see everything that Getting Grown has been working on. But in the meantime and in between time, make sure you enjoy this episode of Radical Joy featuring our sister, Hey Franiqua Ola.
So we are excited, excited, excited to have a mainstay at the kitchen table, one of our sister friends who just belongs here with us.
Absolutely.
Friends back, guys.
Franiqua's in the building.
Hey, friends.
How are you guys?
We are excited. Man, I'm just glad to see your face.
Oh,
I'm just glad to see your face.
That makes me happy.
I just saw your face. I literally just came from Fran's house like an hour ago.
Yeah, man, because y'all been working double duty over here. I love to see it. Everything good with you, sis?
Yes.
Everything's good. Everything's good. Everything's good. I'm out here working. Me and Fran together about 4 times a week.
Child.
And
having all the fun.
She's not sick of me yet, and I'm grateful. And and I don't have anything to complain about outside of these government planted fireworks.
Oh my God. My please, Lord. Lord please, Lord. Please.
Listen,
Lord.
You know it's a thing here too.
It's everywhere.
It's a thing everywhere.
It's psychological warfare on a national level. That's exactly what I'm convinced of.
It's like
No, dead ass. I feel like they're planting them in the hood the way they planted those mounds of bricks. And niggas love fireworks, so they're like, yes. And they go and they see this big pile and it's Disney World.
I legit want to go downstairs and ask them why. That's it. I just want to look in his face and say, why are you doing this? Fireworks cannot be that fun.
Your hands don't get tired?
Because I'm just like, first of all, it's Thursday at like 8:30.
Kia, what are they we started on my block, and Jade is my witness. They started at 3 p.m. yesterday. 3
and they go till 3 a.m.
and don't stop till 3 a.m. I'm like, I at one point wanted to just cry. I didn't have the tools to process that many hours of fireworks. I wanted to just cry. Either that or
they're
throw
trying to
stuff.
Condition our brains.
I want to throw stuff at them.
As native New Yorkers, as people who grew up in these environments, I can say that this is unprecedented. Yeah. It has never been this bad before. Never. So I don't
We've always had fireworks.
How,
like that's
going
not
on.
New.
Always.
Especially if you grew up in the hood, you know that that's like a staple. Once
every
hits
year.
Like June, July, up until about September, you're going to hear fireworks.
It's happening.
Just how it gets down. But not like this. Not the cannon sounding ones. Over and over, and then starting at 3.
And I am in PG County. I'm just like, friends. What are y'all doing? Like, I'm just like, this is not the hood, so to speak, right? Like, we are, like, PG County has its hood areas, but, you know, where, like, we are hood adjacent, for sure.
That's how you know.
But, I mean, like, y'all, like, I live in a community with young professionals, or so I thought. So I'm trying to figure out, like, what are y'all doing? Like, help me understand.
I saw there was an investigative reporter on Twitter who was asking people for some feedback. He was like, please DM me if you're experiencing this. And then he came back around and he said from what he gathered, some people said that they'd seen random white men pulling up in SUVs and lighting this and then like leaving, or when they asked the young kids, where'd you receive this from? They were like, oh, some man in the SUV actually like just gave it to us. Yep. So it's definitely something fishy going on. We just haven't connected
the
dots.
I've been saying it and niggas thought I was crazy.
And I wouldn't be surprised.
Like,
no. You know, I'm the conspiracy theorist ass friend. So I'm like, yes, that's exactly what's happening.
I told friends,
that actually
like,
makes sense.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if it has to do with like this campaign to defund the police. Maybe they're like, okay, we gonna stress y'all the fuck out and see if you need us. And then we're not gonna be there.
There was a video I saw where someone posted the police were doing like siren wars.
I saw that in Harlem.
You saw that?
Yeah, like 3 a.m. in West Harlem.
Yes.
I saw that.
That is exactly what's going. And there, if I'm in here, I had to have the air on. I had to have the Goldbergs blasting from the damn TV. I'm in the bed, and I still could hear the boom boom in the background.
Insane,
like
absolutely
it's
madness. It's starting to really rattle me, and y'all know how important my sleep is. So I'm like, oh my god, they're wearing me out.
Which is why today's conversation is so important.
Which is why we have convened for this very reason. Thank y'all for your patience. Last week we did a re-air. We wanted to just kind of like refresh ourselves on a conversation and get ourselves ready for this week's discussion. We talked last week's conversation centered on stress and stress management and things that we can do to deal with stress, you know, in our day-to-day lives. But I think a part of that for me, what I'm learning, especially given such unprecedented times that we're navigating, like in like national context, like what it means to be in the bodies that we are in the world during this time, right? And what that looks like and how that shows up in our day-to-day lives. One of the things that I am interested in learning more about and getting better at is really building my muscles for joy and like self-care. And we talk about self-care a lot. It's a buzzword. It's something that people kind of talk about, you know, sometimes not as substantively, but I want to have a real substantive conversation about cultivating a practice of that and thinking about joy as a space for self-care that we deserve, mm-hmm. that we have to have, that we have to prioritize. And I was saying before we started recording that in my friendship with Fran over the years, one of the things that has drawn me to her and just one of the things that I really admire about Fran is that Fran is fearless when it comes to taking care of Fran. And it is something that you have to respect it. You know, I have seen Fran literally and, you know, grow in that in being able to prioritize herself and not in that like self-centered, like, you know, it's egotistical mm-hmm. way, but in a way that says, you know, in order for me to be my best self and to do the work that I've been assigned to do, I have to make sure that I have taken optimal mm-hmm. care of who I am. And I've just always, I've admired that about you for years now. And now that that's something that I'm trying to implement those practices in my own life, I wanted us to have a conversation about what that journey has been like for you. So tell us how you learned, like, you know, I guess the first question I have, was there an incident in your life? Was there something that incited this in you? What sparked you to kind of take this perspective?
Honestly, it had to do with the fact that no one ever cared for me growing up. Like, I, you know, my mom covered the basics that were important. Like, I was eating and going to school and mm-hmm. had clothing. All that was covered. But when it came to like my emotional wellness, my mental health, my spiritual wellness, I didn't have anyone that was asking me any questions or providing that nurture or even serving as some kind of role model or some kind of system that I could mm-hmm. observe. It just wasn't there. And I saw how much I was suffering because of that. Like it changed the lens of how I saw life. Like I just was, you know, you start feeling so victimized, like, you know, the world is mm-hmm. against you. 'Cause it's like, how was I born? And no one was excited about it. No one, I never felt like I was wanted in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And that's just a very mm-hmm. heavy burden to carry as a child, especially. And then as an adult growing up, I'll speak for myself. I started taking that out on a lot of people, like when mm-hmm. I was dating and in friendships mm-hmm. and it was almost like I expected things of people because I was trying to recreate those dynamics that I didn't have with my parents and trying to like fix it through people. And it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I started to, which we've talked about before, like when you start humanizing your parents and it's less about mm-hmm. what you did to me and more about how we as a collective are experiencing life.
Right.
And how it's affecting right. our interpersonal relationships. And once I stepped into that perspective, everything changed because then it became more about mm-hmm. me trying to tap into why my mom didn't have those tools as opposed to mm-hmm. pointing the finger that she didn't have them. It was like, how do we talk about this right. and get down to it? And that really started making me look at my own toolbox. And that's where the self-care kicked in, because it was like, well, I can't point the finger at her and, you know, and mm-hmm. not do the same for myself. And that's where things like, you know, even brand deals that I get, if I'm overwhelmed, I'm not going to overfunction for anybody. Even mm-hmm. you see how mm-hmm. you caught yourself, Kia, when you were like, I don't want to say selfish. I actually have no problem with that word. I think we should be more selfish. I think we should be more full mm-hmm. of ourselves. Like, think about it. Full of yourself. What's wrong with that? That's great. Mm-hmm. That's the best way that I will serve you, me, is if I have that cup full first. And then you're mm-hmm. getting my most mm-hmm. authentic optimal voice at that point. And so it was, the fearlessness comes from just understanding that this is the only way that I can move in the world is if I take care of me, because unfortunately I didn't have anyone else to do it. And if I was going to survive, those tools had to be figured out very, very quickly.
What age would you say you were when you started like taking it seriously?
Honestly, something, well, the Saturn returns, so I'm not surprised, but something about 29. That 29, 30 frame, everything changed. Suddenly I was looking at the partners I was with and I was like, hell no. It was like, this don't feel good. That don't feel good. I don't want to do this. Suddenly my nose became a little more confident. It's like I found the fearlessness in my throat to just start speaking up, because I saw me repeating the cycle of my family. And it was like, well, somebody's got to break this shit. Somebody. You know, I see how my mom is passive aggressive and she doesn't know how to say no. She does not put herself first. And I'm like, OK, if anything, that's what she did model for me, is what I don't want to continue. And so that has been, 29, 30. That's where shit just shifted. And by 33, I was like, fuck off. I say no more than I say yes at this point.
Oh, man. I think that's real, though. So definitely, I say the language that I've been trying to use is like building a muscle for it.
I love
because
that.
Because I do feel like it's something that, first of all, I've been using this metaphor a lot, even in my writing at work. But like, when you think about a muscle, when we've been muscle development, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it is something that
you're literally ripping it.
Yeah. Like you, and it is about tearing down what was so that something stronger can grow back.
Yep.
And I don't think that we have dealt with the discomfort that comes with stepping into this space. And that discomfort is intimidating for a lot of people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I know for me, I have been challenged in finding the part of me that is unafraid to be disruptive as it relates to me prioritizing myself in the ways that I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that me being the Kia that I know that I need to be means that the Kia that my mother was most accustomed to is going to have to die.
Yeah.
And the Kia that some of my close friendships, is connected to, that kid is going to have to die, which means that as a result, some of those relationships are going to have to die in that way. And I don't want to use that language, you know, lightly, but it is a death.
It is what it is. Because
oftentimes, and a death, like, you know, it's the grief. So I'm finding that my, like, you know, kinds of conversations that I'm having to have with people who I love, This is not about, like, you know, you don't, you know, dismiss people that you don't really know, acquaintances, people that you haven't spent a lot of time with. But when you talk about, I'm not moving in this way anymore, and as a result, you and I may not be able to connect in the ways that we once did. We talking about relationships that have years on them. Mm-hmm. Like, so.
Yeah, it's no easy feat.
Were there instances in your process, in your transition, where you had to deal with the pain of that change, that stretching, that building of muscle?
Mm-hmm.
What were some, were there any examples that come to your mind that for somebody who, like me, may be struggling in learning how to find their no and their no more and their not now and their all of that?
And they're all of that.
Yeah.
We actually, you know, we had an episode that I really loved of Friend Zone called Good Kid, Mad City, a couple months ago already. And it was basically the pain of being the good kid.
Mm-hmm.
The silent suffering of being the good kid. And that episode really hit home for a lot of us, because we talked about one case in particular. I read a case from this therapy website, and it was a young girl who had done everything right. You know, went to the school her parents wanted. She was a good kid. She listened. She was compliant. And by the time she was older, she realized she had no idea who she was. She didn't know what she liked. She didn't know what she wanted. She had internalized her parents' voice to the point that it literally usurped her own. And that's when she was like, even her relationships that she was in, she's like, I didn't even know what I liked, who I liked. It's just like no connection to self. And her therapist told her, what's your biggest fear? And she feared not having the love and approval of her parents. And she said, so her therapist asked her, which one is a bigger suffering? You know, the thought of losing their approval and their shiny, bright, glowing view of you, or living a life that's authentically yours. And she was like, wow. And as you know, as soon as she started removing her parents' voice and expectations and deciding, like, this is what I like, this is what I desire, these are my needs. Yeah, she said, guess what? Her parents actually didn't really love her as much. and they didn't glow. One line she said that stuck out to me was she said, when they saw her, they no longer glowed. And that was heart-wrenching for her, but not in comparison to a life that she was completely disconnected from living. And I thought that was so profound, just to see that process that she had to endure. And so, no, the work is not easy. When people say, like, just do the work and spiritual and self-care, it's not just bath bombs. It's actually losing quite possibly your relationship to your parents if it's not in alignment with your highest self and relationships. And being brave enough, that's where the fearlessness comes in. Because I know that if I feel good, the people that will vibrate with that are going to be there. And the people that don't will not be there. And that's not always going to be that, you know, that's going to be a hard pill to swallow. I have lost a couple friendships, not too many. For the most part, I think what does happen is there might be some distance where it's like there's no beef, but there's also not much for us to talk about. And then there are the friendships, too, where you acknowledge that you're trauma bonding. I saw people saying that a lot about Issa and Molly on Twitter, which I thought was an interesting perspective, where notice they only get together and fall in line with each other when everything's fucked up.
Falling apart.
But notice when shit's what's good, happening right now.
Exactly. Look how the season ended. They both, you know, were heartbroken. So it's like, oh, let me call Issa. You know, and it's just like
the source of their reconnection.
Exactly. And I had relationships where our fun was getting pissy drunk and venting about how men weren't shit or how our parents did this. And then when stuff was good, we actually didn't even really call each other like that. So those are things I took note of, you know, and even my dad, like.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And even my dad, like, I stopped trying to create a relationship that clearly he didn't want. And that was a big one for me. It's like, okay, how do you not take that personal?
Right.
We just, it's funny, people, you know, people when they joke on Twitter, like, that kid got bad vibes. Like parents that don't connect with their kids. It's like, my dad and I don't fuck with each other. Like, what you gonna do? There's just a lot there between us that is a barrier to us connecting. I don't know what the barriers are. He does, you know, and I have to respect it and honor that that's just what it is. But what my job was to stop trying because it was making my life difficult. It was a source of pain and confusion, especially because it's something I didn't have control over. So my advice is similar to the therapy blog. accept that this is going to be painful.
Yeah.
And it's not, spiritual work is not ever going to be easy.
Easy.
I don't want you all to get swept up in Beyonce's song. It's a wonderful song. We love it very much. But, you know, you don't charge your crystals in the moonlight and light your Nag Champa and think that everything is going to be all good. You know what I'm saying? I've had to deal with the same thing with my parents, my mother especially, with several expectations that she had of me. And it is not easy to say, I am not going to live up to those expectations because that right. is not the person that I am. But that's what that's the boundary that I've had to set with my mother. And imagine setting that with the person who brought you into this world and right. the amount of
and not
guilt.
Internalizing it as you being a failure just because you didn't live up to right. exactly. their perception. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And I have that's to be one. Very vocal about that. I have to be very vocal and let her know when I don't agree with things that she says. I actually will combat it. To the point where my mother calls me combative and I own it. I'm like, you're right. I am combative because I don't agree with you on this and I'm never going to agree with you just for I love you very, very much and I'm always going to love you, but I'm not going to agree with you if I don't agree with you. And that's just never right. what it's going to be. And if that means that our relationship has to cool off, I've told my mother on several occasions, if you feel like you need to take some distance from me for a while, then you go ahead and do that. And that's not an easy thing to tell your mother. And right. of course, they instill the mom guilt. I brought you into this world. I took care of you. I did mm-hmm. so forth and so on. And you have to work to not receive that projection of guilt because you're like, wait a minute, girl. You're supposed to do those things. But that doesn't mean that I don't get a right to speak up about something that I don't agree with. Right. So I'm right there. I fully agree with you, Fran. It takes work and it's not easy Ooh. Work.
And it's work that doesn't just like stop overnight. Like I think this is a lifelong undoing and unlearning yep. and unraveling.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. it's we've discussed this when we did the daddy issues episode where it's like healing is not linear. I had some months am like so good and I feel like I have mm-hmm. a good grasp on everything I've been through and how to process it if anything comes up and kicks up in my spirit. And then there'll be a week or another mm-hmm. month where I am in shambles and suddenly mm-hmm. everything that's ever happened to me is in my face and I'm crying yes. and I'm in my house Mariah Carey wall sliding and I just you know, and it's like how does that happen? I thought I was fine.
Right. It's a range of human emotions, right. Child.
It is. And I think it comes back to what we talked about, like this process of unlearning mm-hmm. And like literally like recasting, reframing. Mm-hmm. I got to a point, it probably was around 29, if I'm being right? honest, but mm-hmm. I got to a point
the golden
when,
age.
Yeah, I got to a point when I realized like the young lady in the example from the blog, that I had no sense of knowing things for myself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think what complicated that even further for me was church.
Mm.
Specifically around, because, you know, I think like, you know, one of the things just kind of like, let me see how I want to say this, because it is, I think a lot of times we take on things, we're indoctrinated and socialized to do things. And it seems like the right thing to do because everybody's doing
right.
it. Mm-hmm. But something clicked over on me around that age where it was like, I really wanted to know my motive for doing something, believing something, mm-hmm. For myself. I wanted to be able to defend it.
Yeah.
And I say it happened around that time because I think for me, one of the things, that graduate school kind of opened me up to is that, like, you know, when you're establishing yourself as a voice, as an authority about something, you have to be able to have the capacity to defend your ideas.
That's interesting.
And I looked around and realized that a lot of the things that I felt and believed and held so tightly to were because my mama said, or because my grandfather said, or because, you know what I'm saying? And when it came down to why I really believe things, and that's something, you know, and y'all know me, I'm a church baby and I don't think I'll ever not be,
mm-hmm.
but there was something that happened where it was like, it became less about the practices of going to church and doing those things, you know, that church folks are supposed to do, and more about like really knowing Jesus for myself, mm-hmm. really understanding him as a person who walked the earth, and looking at things that we read from the perspective of that actual human lived mm-hmm, experience. Mm-hmm. And then looking at using that as a framework for what that meant for me and my lived experience. And I started to notice there were some things that didn't line up or things that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And it was never been about me denying or talking trash about, you know, cause I feel like people do the best they can with what they got.
Of course.
And when you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. So I learned a little bit better. So I've started to do better for myself. But it was around 29 where I started to really, really want to understand things and understand myself for myself, and to be able to know what I want without somebody having to tell me what that looked like. And I think, that resulted in some shifts and changes in my relationships, in my family, and my close personal friendships and things like that. And it's still, so I'm saying this to say, like, you know, when we talk about it being a practice, mm-hmm. there are ways that it still shows up, where I realize, you know, I have to sit and do the inquiry and reflective work of like, well, why do I believe that so hard? Like, you're like, mm-hmm. why is this so important to me? And why am I willing to die on this hill? Like, I mean, and I think that's something that's coming up for me now more and more, given where we are in the world. And I've gotten to a place where I can say that, you know, church has stopped feeling good.
That's real.
And not because I don't believe in God. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the practice of things that we do. It got to a point where
has created of God.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, it was less. And the things that I'm learning that some, and I'm not every church, but some churches, some church leaders, to me, our focus is different. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in this space where I am thinking about how do I, given this world that we live in, that we navigating things we never had to navigate before, and it feels like we can't do nothing about it. Mm-hmm. We have to accept certain horrible things about our lives, and I don't want to live in this space. This ordained space, I feel like God knew we was going to be in this space, right? So that being said, how do I live in this space and find ways to lean into whatever this space is designed to teach us, and not let the parts of me that keep me going forward, the joyful parts, the restorative parts, not let those parts be overshadowed mm-hmm. by all the mess. Mm-hmm. So that was a really long way of segueing into the joy conversation, because to me, joy is not conditional, right? Joy is something that we have to have, or we choose to have despite what's going on in our circumstances mm-hmm. around us. So Fran, Jay, mm-hmm. jump in, let me know. What are some of the things and the ways that you are aiming or aspiring to be diligent in holding on to the joy of life as a means of your self-care, as a part of your self-care?
Well, I love that you compared it to like field research, because for me, it's like, I didn't have anyone to teach me how to do any of this. So I had to learn by being my own example and embodying those practices. And, you know, something as simple as removing a relationship that doesn't make you feel good, you start seeing how much more space you have. Mm-hmm. And then slowly you're like, oh, what else can I? It's like when you start going through your closet And you know how at first you don't want to get rid of anything because you're like, but I could wear that next year or I might need that for a party. But then you know how there's something that shifts in your brain where as soon as you really start being like, okay, just let it, you know, you're not going to wear that. Exactly. Like, and suddenly you want to throw your whole closet away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly you have bags and bags and bags, and it's, and then the question becomes, okay, girl, well, you need something to wear outside because you get hyped. Okay. And it's the same thing for me where it's like, once I got into that space of like, oh, I have the power to design a life that feels good. Well, I'm on a rampage. And it's funny because I actually think you have to go to the opposite extreme end of the spectrum in a way. Where you like start feeling it a little too much and then you want to get rid of everything. But then that's important because you need to experience the spectrum for yourself. And then you find your footing over time of like, okay, maybe that, maybe I didn't need to say no to that. I just was excited to say no. I found my voice and got a little too excited that I could use it. Yeah. And you start saying no to everything. And then slowly you reel it in and find that center of the spectrum where you're like, okay, this is who Fran is. This is this is the comfort zone. This is the sweet zone. This is a spot where my voice actually lies and not me, you know, the one spectrum where you're removing and the other spectrum where you're practicing. That middle part is where you're being. And it's just so beautiful when you get there. And so now I feel like that's why I'm so comfortable, because I know what feels good and that's all that matters to me now. And so even something as simple as like my home with all my plants and my diffuser, and it's like, this is my safety. I didn't grow up with safety and I had to create it. And now that I have it, you are going to have to pry it from my fingers, from my dead fingers.
Take, give me your comfort, you Taurus.
And it's not easy because there is a guilt. I've spoke about this on a roundtable I was a part of recently. Shout out to Miriam Hasnay, is one of my closest friends. Oh, she put a roundtable of black women, right? Black women healers and energy workers and visionaries. And it was just so powerful because they're all so amazing that I even cried on the roundtable. I cried because I was like, wow, man, this is what black women in their power look like. Like, what a blessing that I get to be around that. And those are my peoples. And one of the women, her name is Sumaya. She's a doula. She's incredible. She said that when people were asking her if she protested, she said, yeah, I took a 3-hour bath.
Yeah. Oh, when I tell you that, it was everything. That was everything.
And I was like, lived. This is incredible. She said that was her protest because her grandma always taught her, your job is to be beautiful and black and live and survive. And just like, you're not in a space of like trying to be seen. She said her grandma always told her she was beautiful and always told her she was important and always instilled that. So her only job is to be. And to take her baths and live a lavish life where she's just a beautiful woman who gets to do what she wants. And that's her radical, that's her most radical form of protest. And hearing that really affected me. I cried. Number one, I cried hearing that she had the opportunity to grow up being affirmed, because we don't hear that a lot. And that affected me on so, it like hit me to my core. In happiness that somebody got to experience that it existed somewhere in our collective experience. And then to hear her form of protest, which the average person might take wrong and be triggered by, because you know, a lot of us are like, well, you got to be in the front lines. And it's like, listen, we're all here to do whatever we are called to do. And that's the beauty of it, you know? And I love that that's what she felt called to do. And you know, and I admitted that I was in on the fence. I'm holding both dots at the same time. Well, yeah, I'm the one that is going to go take that radical protest bath. But Jade and Crystal and I still went and got food and waters and went to the protest to nurture our community, because we also understand the importance of that experience and wanting to be an ecosystem where we're all pushing each other in whatever we are being called to do. And so for me, that's all a long way to say, whatever you feel called to do, whatever you feel called to express. I think the beauty of finding that voice is like doing what it means to you without guilt. Like, I love that she said that. It really impacted me because she didn't look guilty.
No,
she didn't. She didn't try to appeal to us either on how we reacted to that either. Mm-hmm. It was like, I said what I said.
It was a statement, period.
Period at the end of the sentence. And I was like, what an embodiment. is goals to me. And because in a lot of ways I am that way, but I still do have that ping of guilt of like, I need to do more for my community. Mm-hmm. But it's like, do you know the blessing of if you take care of yourself in a world that isn't trying to take care of you in any way?
Yeah.
Like, that's a radical protest. Mm-hmm. Especially as Black women, that we tend to put ourselves last in every realm, whether it's work,
we're taught to do
family.
It, yes.
Yeah, tradition. You know, and this is a form of protest. And I was just so affected by that. And I think it's a message that I want women to integrate and internalize, that we have that birthright.
That's how I feel about joy. You know, I think I've always kind of used my personal joy almost as a defense mechanism beforehand. And now I've learned to find more of a balance. I kind of, like Fran was saying, sometimes I feel guilty for moments where I'm like, I don't feel as bad as I should right now. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I feel like I should
That's
feel
a big
worse.
One.
And I'm like, but I don't. And I find that it is a protection for me. And it is a form of protest when things are so, because things can get bad. Like last week, I had a hell of a fucking week. And I find that if I sit in that, it's not conducive for me. So I can have a hell of a week. I can have a hell of a day. I can have a hell of a conversation. But I always try to find, it could be something, I could end up looking at Twitter and I see something that makes me bust out laughing. And I use that as my way to climb out of that, because I know me sitting in that is not hurting anybody but myself. So I've found, even I felt guilty about posting the cocktail videos.
I remember. And I was like, hell no, Jade.
And then I got over it quick. Had a conversation with Fran, had a conversation with self. And I was like, you know what? Niggas need drinks. You know what I'm saying? Like, niggas need drinks. Right now, of all times, while this shit is busting in the background and you know what I'm saying? It's bombs over Baghdad. Like, niggas need drinks right now. And you know what happened? When I went ahead and went with that mind and I did that, niggas were happy. They were like, thank you. Yeah. We need drinks.
And they were supportive of it. They were like, thank you
Very
for creating
so.
During this time.
And that's where I realized that's part of my protest, to provide the joy that I provide to myself. Because let me tell y'all something, I have a good time by myself. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing over here. And providing that joy just with energy to other people is a form of my personal protest and how I serve my community, because there are people who don't know how to find that joy. And so I use that as a strength. Than when I'm able to take those moments, even in utter turmoil in my personal life, I take those moments of joy and it helps me to feel good, and it's projected onto the community as well.
And you're reminding Absolutely. People that they have the permission. I think that's a big one in our
it's
community.
It's okay. Yeah.
You're completely allowed. And one thing I want to add, Ikea and I have had conversations about this before where... Mm-hmm. Whatever feeling is coming up, whether it's like anger, sadness, depression, joy. I always talk about this poem by Rumi. It's called The Guest House, where in the poem he says, you know, feelings are like a guest house. You open the door and there's a new one every morning. And your job is to let them in and sit with them, you know. And I think I noticed that we are so welcoming of sadness. When sadness hits, we'll sit with it and stew in it. Depression hits, we'll stew in it. But with joy, I noticed that a lot of us have a trouble receiving that guest. When it knocks on the door, we have guilt. We don't know how to let it in. We think we don't. Oh, you knocked on the wrong door. It's like we don't know how to let that in. And I love when the other day we were at Crystal's house and we were singing immature songs.
Yes. Yeah, we're saying a medley of things.
We sang a medley of Immature's greatest hits. Very random night. Very random night. But it was probably the most fun I've had in such a long time that when I was in the Uber home, my body felt different. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mm-hmm. And this is the thing about letting joy in, even amidst turmoil and chaos. And when that guilt hits, like, don't forget that you have the capacity as a multidimensional being to carry all of these experiences at the same time. I can sing an immature medley and still be in complete awareness of yeah. what our community is going through.
Absolutely.
One doesn't cancel the other. And
I'm a
and
one
just
up you,
make
friend.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm a one up you. Not only should you have the capacity for that? You deserve that, especially
you
as a black
right.
person.
You have
a right
the only
to experience
way
that joy.
Sustain. I mean, like suffering all the time. We already experienced that. And that's what
exactly.
I was saying about my childhood. I can't even think. I feel bad because sometimes people will ask me things about my childhood. Oh, did you ever do this? And I'll be like, no. My shit was terrible. Like, people don't understand.
And the reactions be so wild to be like, oh, I'm okay.
Yeah, because it's like, no, I was not that kid with like the cute birthday parties and the bicycle. Like, no, there was a lot of suffering and death and trauma and abuse. It's like, mm-hmm. It was like a bad Tyler Perry movie. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so now the moments that I get to sit with my friends and sing stupid songs for 5 hours straight because that's what we found fun, like, I'm yeah. going to lean into it.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Because you need Absolutely. It on a cellular level. I need to remember that this is allowed.
And not only it's allowed, it's restorative. I think it is a part of our practice of continuing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We need to imprint that into our cells. Mm, like, hey, little cells, remember you can feel
exactly.
this too.
You can. And I think it's essential. And I honestly feel like it is our responsibility to impress that upon a generation that's coming behind
us. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
Like, as we are navigating the traumas that were put on us and that we are unlearning, it is our duty to share this new knowledge and information with the people that are coming behind us. Because when I really think about it, and I talk to my grandparents and I talk to older people, because I love stories and I love history in that way. But I think if you look at our history in this country as a people, surviving horrible shit is our birthright.
Mm. Man,
it is something that we have literally been built to do.
Mm-hmm.
On Juneteenth, the way that I chose to celebrate was to start a thread on Twitter asking people to share their favorite things about being black.
That.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things and I did it on Twitter and Instagram.
I love that.
And got such positive response. But one of the things that kept coming up over and over again, in addition to things like our laugh. Mm-hmm. Things like our capacity to make fun out of anything, not fun of anything, but fun out of anything. Mm-hmm. We can make game and sport. We can make difficult things enjoyable.
It's facts.
Look how nothing survives Black Twitter.
Nothing.
Like, we can find the humor
in everything.
In everything. And that's not, so some people would say that that's us not taking things seriously, when I think it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I think that having the capacity to look at things and have that duality about things by being able to be present in how awful the thing is, but then to see the humor in it and to use that humor mm-hmm. to navigate through it, I think is a gift that we have. And that's something that kept coming over and over again. We have survived terrible shit before as a people,
mm-hmm.
totally based on the fact that we can make up dances and songs and words, and we can literally have nothing mm-hmm. and still have a good time.
It's true. I got
like nothing.
I think I was 12 or 13 and I had a man pull a gun on me. And I had to stand there and it had the gun right there. My sister was maybe 15, 16. And she got bit in the head by a homeless nigga, like bit so hard with the strength that you bite into a chicken breast that she had to get shots in her head. And to this day, we still make fun of the nigga who put the gun on me because we remember what his door looked like. And we still will laugh and we'll be like, remember when you got bit in the head by that homeless nigga? And I find that to be a form of the, you know, a form of that protest or that radical joy, because we can take a terrible experience
and control how it hits our body. That's how I view it. I'm going to control how I internalize this experience.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Save big money on your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Exactly. That's my power.
It's become the only coping mechanism that I know, like literally, like, and y'all know that this time of year is tough for me because we lost Brian 4 years ago around this time and his birthday's coming up. Mm-hmm. So like this particular juncture of the year is always challenging for me. But one of the things that literally pushes me to keep going is thinking about the fun that me and my brother used to have. Mm-hmm. Thinking about songs we used to sing in my mom's backseat. Thinking about when he used to Jones on me. Like I was telling my friend the other day the story of, I was in this wedding. This was years ago. I was still in college. So I maybe was like a junior in college. That might be 20 years old. I was in this girl's wedding. I wasn't really close to the girl. Just a girl at the church who was getting married. She called my grandma and asked if I would be her bridesmaid. And my grandmother was like, sure. And I was like, grandma, what are you doing? So I was in this girl's wedding. And out of nowhere, like I was running around. I had to work. Her wedding was on a Saturday afternoon. I had to work that morning. Running around and managed to get to her house. Managed to get in the dress. Hadn't really taken care of myself. Didn't eat. Just got to the church so we can get through the wedding. And I passed out in the wedding.
Oh, shit. In the wedding?
Literally made it. In the wedding. I made it down the aisle and was standing up there with the rest of the bridesmaids. I was the tallest. So I was like the first one to come in. I was standing on the end. And was literally standing there like, wow, I made it. It was been a crazy day. I made it. We're here at the wedding now. I just got to get through the wedding and I can get to the reception and all will be well. And I literally remember thinking like, it is so dark in this church. But
oh
in
my
the world,
God, no.
Is it dark? Like, why would they turn the lights out? Like,
my God.
And the next thing I knew, I was on the floor. I was blacking out.
My God.
And I was on the floor and I woke up and my brother was standing like, I literally opened my eyes and his face was over mine. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, he was just so disgusted. It was like he was less than concerned about how I was actually feeling, like my health. Right. But he was just like, you have embarrassed me and you need to explain what the problem is. But just thinking about that story and telling that story literally was the only way I was able to wipe my tears and carry on about my day. Just thinking about how disgusted he was with me because I had passed out in this girl's wedding. She was like, what is wrong with you? What is it like? I mean, he was fussing, a full fuss, and I was on the ground like, what
is
happening?
Nothing. The fact that this is not the first time I've heard this is not from you. My home, one of my best friends was diagnosed with breast cancer last year and ended up getting a double mastectomy. And it happened literally. She was diagnosed a month after her mother-in-law passed from breast cancer. You would think that, you know, she would be down in the dumps. She came, she met me, she came and flew to me in person to tell me that she had it. And then I saw her afterwards, and one of the first things she said to me, she was like, "So bitch, do I look like a little boy or what?" But right after she had the double mastectomy, she goes and does like a sibling trip with three of her siblings. So they're all at a restaurant, and she's not eating very much because she's not feeling good from the medication. And so she was drinking wine. They're in Colorado, and so the altitude was high. Mm-hmm. And she ends up passing out in the restaurant. She wakes up and all three of her siblings are standing over her. Bitch, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Exactly.
Eat some goddamn food. And if you eat some food, you won't be embarrassing us. They're apologizing to the people in the restaurant. Sorry. And she,
not sorry and that she passed out.
She's dying laughing. So,
yes. But that was such a thing.
That's what we find ways to laugh Brian at ourselves and like laugh at our pain. And that's how we get through. And I think when we sit in that, that's when it starts to eat at us. But when you're able to to kind of overcome that by laughing at it or by finding joy in other things, you take power over it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Awesome. Well, I think that we have sufficiently dealt with this topic.
Yes, that was a great conversation, guys.
I enjoyed it so
Thank
much.
You
yes.
Thank you for including so much, me. Fran.
Always.
Absolutely. Fran is the person who I think of when I'm like, should I do this? Like when I think of like very slowly but gratefully building my home into the space that is mine that I love. And when I think about, and Jay helped me through this too. Like, you know, I'm struggling in feeling worthy of the things that I want.
Right.
Because I have conditioned myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've conditioned myself, you know, to just, I can just get by with what I need. I didn't need a big grand bed. I didn't need, you know, these kinds of things, you know, when I was a struggling graduate student. And now it's like, no, I don't necessarily need a king size bed, but I like it.
Yeah, why not? So, all that room. Why not?
Why not? I mean, just go ahead.
I said you look dumb as hell if you had a twin bed in that room. You better get a king size bed. First of all, you a big ass nigga. You tall as hell. Like, what the hell you look like in a full size bed?
But feeling like it's okay for me to, because I feel, you know, we grew up humble beginnings, right? I watched my mother struggle financially and making sure that we had what we needed. And I just value and appreciate the sacrifices that she's made, that I don't ever want to be flippant with my money or flippant with anything, right? Mm-hmm. But thinking about, I always think about, like, you know, would friends say that I deserve this? I think she would.
I would always say yes.
You know she is.
My favorite thing to say, like, when I'm deciding if I should get something, I'm always like, my favorite thing is being like, you give so much to the world as it is on so many levels. Like, you deserve everything. It's very rare that I say no to myself at this point, because I'm like, of course I deserve it. That's the default answer. And then the brain has to kick in like, but should you, friend? Mm-hmm. Should you spend that astronomical price to get on this shit that you don't actually need? But I'm always going to say right. yes, because I am my number one fan.
I got to love on me
I love on I me hard. I deserve Absolutely. It. Somebody has to love on me hard, and I'm doing it Absolutely. In the meantime. So, That's you know, it. I'm going to say yes to all of the things, all of the king beds.
Yeah.
And I had to overcome that with mom shit. I had to be like, you know, I used to feel guilty about buying things for myself.
That's a big thing with parents. I see that with all my friends that are parents. Y'all feel guilty for eating an ice cream without your kid around.
Mm-hmm. I stopped. Let me tell you who stopped that shit. Because I sat here one day and I was like, nigga, I work hard. And this little nigga has no worries. Like, I mean, when I tell you not a one. She don't have a worry. Every time she turns around, it's a fucking Barbie thing in her face. You know what I'm saying? She's loved and she's full and she's well adjusted and you know what I'm
and
saying?
So, and
she's
affirmed and supported and emotionally taken care of. Like, I see how when she has something that maybe you wouldn't agree with, instead of you telling her no, you explore that with her because you realize that she's not you. And I love that. I love how she has Jade and Tristan allow her to have space when she needs a break from them. Because kids need a break from our energy too. Like, and she needs to go take a bath and sing for a couple hours.
Yeah, she does.
She has to recalibrate. She's a person. Like, and I love that y'all view her as that and y'all honor that space in her, because she's not going to know to honor it in herself if she does not see you guys honoring it in her.
You're building that practice.
And now Noah's a little friend.
Yeah.
Noah does what? What did she do when we were at Crystal's house the other day? Noah went outside. She was sick of us. We were loud. She was on the iPad. She went outside on the deck.
And was she meditating.
Meditating. We looked and little hands were like this. And she's looking up at the sky meditating. She's like, I just needed quiet. And we let her have that. You know what I'm saying? So,
go ahead,
so that when
Noah.
She gets older, she doesn't feel guilty. That's not projected onto her. She doesn't feel guilty about feeling good, about receiving good things in her life, which so many of us struggle with. We have a hard time with it, just pleasuring ourselves in whatever way that is. I'm not even being nasty.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Reminding her that her voice... Her voice is there for a reason. And I think that's a big one. When parents try to make us so compliant, they don't realize how much of a disservice they're doing to us. Because then we end up saying yes to everyone because we just want to.
For the rest of our lives.
Yeah, we want you to like us.
That they don't want you to deal with. So
you literally don't know how not to be that way. And parents have to keep in mind, you are setting the tone for how we connect to everyone after you.
Which so is choose why, teacher, wisely. You don't seek anybody's acceptance, not even ours. Like, whatever makes you happy, we want to nurture that. And then you take that and you run with it and carry that energy with you with dealing with all these raggedy niggas. And then when I say niggas, that is all encompassing, because I don't know what's going to happen with her when she gets older. But it's all encompassing. It is human beings. So, friend, we love you so much. We always
love you
coming
guys
to the
too.
Table.
I'm always so happy to come on Getting Grown. I feel like y'all be having the realest conversations. And
it don't even feel like work.
And when you work with black women, only magic happens. So I'm always happy to step into this kingdom.
Those are the rules.
Well, I will see you in an hour because I look at your face all day.
I love you guys and have an incredible rest of your show.
You too, boo.
Thank you, friend.
Bye.
Love you. Bye, guys.
Man, isn't friend always like a warm hug? She's always like a warm hug. I'm telling you, even... In our personal relationship, she's like a warm hug, except for when we share in raggedy memes, because that also happens. But I hope you all truly, truly enjoyed that kitchen table and you got some things from it that you might need. Maybe some messages came through and in the perfect timing. And I hope everybody is enjoying themselves and is enjoying some sort of form of radical joy, especially while we're living in a burning world. But in the meantime, guys, make sure that you're drinking that water because, again, we're at boiling point. Drink that water, okay? Your body can't live without it. Make sure you are minding your business and nobody else's. And lastly, hit them hooves because your black will crack if it's dry. I'll see you all next week. Bye.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.